Blog Talk Radio.
T minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Well, hello and welcome to the 23rd episode of the Being Brilliant radio show. Michael, our host, has just told me that I'm the longest running radio show host so far on the on this whole network, on the Coach on Fire network. So that's pretty cool. So this is Amy Hackett-Jones, your host, happiness and high performance coach for being brilliant in the way you both live and lead your life and those around you. You can find me at www.amyhackett.com. The Being Brilliant radio show is a deep and impactful look at what it takes to be brilliant. The show invites you, our listeners, to step into the very essence of who you are being as you show up to life. My guests bring a combination of inspirational teachings coupled with practical tools and essential life and leadership skills translated into actionable strategies so that you, our listeners, may step into the very best version of yourselves. My interviewees are high performers, thought leaders, game changers, pioneers, dreamers, adventurers, wayseers, visionaries, as well as friends and family. Those whom I believe live brilliantly and who travel magically through life, shining their own light so others may do the same. Now, on this very first episode of the new year, 2017, I have a particularly wonderful, angelic, beautiful, open-hearted, warm, and just brilliant all-round friend and colleague on the show here. Kate Hartley, welcome to the show.
My goodness, I am humbled. I think I'll just say goodbye now and leave it at that. Happy 2017 to you too,
happy,
Amy.
Happy 2017. Yes, it's been quite a ride for 2017.
Yes, you've had one hell of a year. I know that much for sure.
Yeah. So Kate is the founder of Flourish Therapy, and we're going to talk all about that and her journey to flourishing, which is something she does brilliantly. So
we try.
So before we dive in, just to reiterate, everyone, I'm super proud to say that Michael Brooks, who runs this whole network, the Coach on Fire network, did say just a few moments ago that I'm the longest running host on the network. That's pretty cool. So I'm celebrating.
Congratulations.
So there we go. Brilliantly starting a new Being Brilliant show. So Kate, I just want to let people know how I met you, and it wasn't actually that long ago, probably about 9 months ago or so. Mm-hmm. And my mother was already in the hospice, for those who don't
darling
know.
Darling Raywin.
I know. She had cancer for about 9 years and fought every bit of the way. She really did defy all the doctor's predictions. But then in about March last year, she was taken into hospice, and Kate turned up. I'm not quite sure how you first got to chat with Mum, but I turned up a couple of days later and Mum said, "You have to meet Kate." And I sort of thought, well, if Mum is so insistent that I had to meet Kate, then obviously Kate's got to be a pretty good thing. And I think it was a week or two before we actually met.
Yes.
In person, we exchanged a few messages, didn't we?
We did.
And then I did meet you, and I just thought immediately, gosh, what a bright, shining, brilliant, angelic light you are. And saw immediately how Mum took to you.
Oh, she was groovy. Your mum was amazing.
Oh.
What a light.
Oh, thank you. She really was. And she saw that in you. And so it was almost like the friendship was already made. And for those who don't know, I then did meet Kate in person in the hospice, and we had a great connection. And then a few weeks later, Mum was struggling to breathe. It was on a Wednesday, 8th of June. And Kate was in the hospice that day and helped relax mum at that particular moment when she was struggling to breathe, and then later on that day passed away. And it was just such a special day and moment to have you there and to know that mum trusted you and that she shared that seeing of your light. And yeah, it was just a sort of magical way to a brilliant new shining connection that I have with you, and hope to hope that it continues to flourish.
Well, it's one of those strange synchronicities in life, isn't it? The fact mm-hmm. that you come across, I mean, your mum really was a shining light. You meet a lot of people in life, and your mum was one of those that really stood out to me. And she got such an adventurous spirit. And I remember talking to her, and Sister Carmel was with me at the same time. And, you know, it was just like the girls' club. She was telling us about her adventures, and she'd got so much energy. And she insisted that I got to get to know you as well, which I'm very glad that she did. Yeah. But sometimes you just meet some people and you just think, yes, I was meant to meet that person for a certain reason, whatever that reason is. And obviously it's turned out that we've become good friends, and that's a fantastic thing to have happened. But she was just, oh, my goodness, she was just such a special person. And you see that courage, and, you know, she was absolutely defiant. It didn't matter whether the fact that she her time was coming to an end. She was absolutely defiant that she was going to make the most of every single second of every day that she had left. And that's something that I admired in her immensely. She's a very brave woman.
She was. I just loved the fact that she insisted on having her walking boots with her in the hospital.
That's what made me laugh so much. There's this woman in the hospice bed, obviously clearly not ever so well, and bless her, she's got her walking boots with her, which is how I got to know her, because then obviously we came to meet her with Keith Foskett, and because of his long distance walking and his success with writing his books. And it was just such the bizarrest thing is that most people bring their slippers and dressing gowns, and your mum was there with her hiking boots next to her. It's just such a superb woman.
And they'd taken her up Everest base camp and up Machu Picchu and all sorts of things. So I mean, they were quite some walking boots. They'd seen some amazing places.
If boots could write a book, those boots could write one of the best books ever. It would be a bestseller, that's for sure. Amazon, eat your heart out.
Yeah, I love it. Amazing. Oh, wonderful. No.
So yeah, I mean, that was a superb way of meeting you, but you know, that's part of the whole point of, I suppose, my existence, if you want for a better word, to try and I don't know, help people live their best lives possible, I suppose. And it doesn't matter how much of their life is left, it's every second counts with something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So take us on a little journey now about your journey to flourishing, to flourish therapy.
Well, gosh, it was quite a convoluted one. crikey, where do I start? I'm a single mum, and so I used to be a helicopter pilot, and I was running or co-running Suffolk Helicopters with a couple of other pilots that I know. And that was kind of it's always been my major passion, and one of my mottos in life is to live life with no regrets. And it's a dream that I'd always had. And after my dad died, I thought, right, I'm going to go and do it. I was with him as he died. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, I was on the end of his bed and spent a long time with him after he died. And I just thought, gosh, I really hope my dad had no regrets, because it would just make his whole life more, I don't know, not worthwhile, but it just gave it more of a meaning if he had no regrets. I didn't want there to be any sadness. You know, it's just, I just wanted to know that he'd had a fulfilled life. And it was that was the key. And I just thought, right, I'm going to fly a helicopter. And I went, but because it's such an expensive thing to do, it had to become a business rather than just a hobby. So I trained, and the idea was to run a helicopter hire out business and become an instructor eventually. But then various the commercial airlines changed their laws and it became quite convoluted. And also then I went through a divorce and I just needed to know that I was going to be there to collect the children from school. They were both very young at the time. And, you know, I can't phone from Manchester to say I'm stranded because of the low cloud level. It just doesn't kind of work. So, and also, do you know, I mean, every time I landed, I said a little prayer of thanks. And I just thought, crikey, if I'm a single mum, they rely on me so much. I really do need to make sure that I've got my feet on the ground and they've got some security knowing that I'm going to be there to pick them up when I need to. So I decided to retrain. And strangely, I'd read somewhere that massage therapists really enjoy their jobs. So I thought, okay, well, I've always been interested in the body and physicality. I've always exercised. I danced ballet for many, many years until I broke my neck in a riding accident. Got over that. And I was very lucky because I didn't have any long-lasting damage. And then I thought, well, perhaps I should go into massage. So I trained in London and I really enjoy that. And I have to say, I can kind of do that blindfolded now. But then after I'd learnt the physical side of it, I thought, I've always really been interested in how the brain affects the body. And actually more importantly for me is the sort of the mind-spirit-body connection. And so I went and did my psychotherapy courses because it was a strange one. I've always felt very spiritual. I don't go to church as often as I probably should do. but then I'm to be honest, it's not the church that's the problem. It's sometimes it's the people that go to it. So I decided to sort of explore the spiritual side of life. And I use my pendulum and I've got dowsing rods. But to be able to work in that kind of field, I also felt I needed to have my qualifications on a psychotherapeutic level. So I did my psychotherapy and advanced psychotherapy and hypnotherapy diplomas. And then I think really it's down to you to then how you specialize and how you go deeper. And having had several years of just, you know, plowing through books and texts and research and this and that, I've now become, you know, I've had that opportunity to become a little bit more spiritual with it all. And it all ties in very nicely now with the spiritual side, the physical side and the mental health side. It's nothing works in its own little oasis. It's all interlinked. And I think that's one of our main problems in society is we don't recognize that the brain, the spirit and the body all are so closely interconnected and interrelated. And so that's where Flourish Therapy started, really, because
amazing.
I've got a lot of ideas still as to where I want to take it. But again, you know, with the time constraints, you can only do so much. So it's a matter of trying to balance what I'm able to do and take it to the places that I want it to be. But it's certainly not finished its evolution just yet.
Fantastic. And so looking at the whole, you know, the whole being, what type of clients typically come to you?
I get a real variation. I get people that come for their Thai yoga massage because they understand the energy lines and the fact that you need to work along the meridians of the body to free up energy and the flow of energy. And because it's kind of passive stretching, but quite extreme stretching, they're a really nice balance of sort of the spiritually aware, but those also needing physical help. And then I get quite a few clients that come for relaxing massage or healing massage. I get quite a lot of cancer patients that have got, they hold a lot of tension in their shoulders and necks and back. So I deal a lot with that. And then I get my psychotherapy clients, and they can range from people needing marriage guidance through to children that have got anxiety issues. And I tend to specialize in the children anxiety because I seem to, you know, I see a lot of children. I love working with children. I'm very happy to work. Yeah, I love it. I work closely with the parents as well. So they're always kept Very informed, and they're usually part of the session unless the child absolutely doesn't want it. And, you know, we can make really good headway, and that's very, very rewarding, because there's so much anxiety in society now. And
I feel
it really annoys me. My children have been off on their Christmas break, and again, they've had to revise for exams. And, you know, I'm not having to go to the school system. Well, I am actually, but, you know, I just think kids need time off. You know, we put so much pressure on them, and it comes through. I see an awful lot of children with anxiety issues, and that, you know, so much so that they're having panic attacks, and they can't go to school and they can't function normally. And then the panic attacks, that probably evolves then into public areas, and they can't go to the restaurants, they can't go to cinemas, and all of a sudden this thing kind of creeps up on them. But the crazy thing is, it's so easy to fix. Especially if you can catch it in the early stages, it is anxiety is 100% treatable, and the sooner you sort of take steps to overcome it, the better. And it's very, very rewarding when you work with kids, because you know that they respond very, very well. Mm. Their brains are really plastic still, and you know they've not had sort of 40 years of deciding how they want their life to be before they've decided, you know, before they come for therapy. And you're really battling then against long established thought processes, which is much more sort of complicated than a youngster. So I see all sorts of different people.
Gosh, that's amazing. And I've seen and heard that as well about kids these days, as you say, becoming highly anxious. What would you say to parents, perhaps, or people who have kids who perhaps do suffer from anxiety attacks? What would be the number one step
Breathing. Deep breathing. Right. I tell everyone, deep breathe. And they all look at me and say, you're mad. What are you talking about, woman?
Yeah.
But it's so true. When we deep breathe, we stimulate the vagus nerve. And you cannot be relaxed and anxious at the same time. And by deep breathing, you are flooding the body with everything it needs, such as oxygen and nutrients. And so you're putting yourself into a relaxed state, which automatically means you cannot be stressed and anxious. And so deep breathing, once they've learned how to practice that and bring it to the fore when they need it, because they kind of, you know, when panic sets in, you forget all your logical things. Subconscious takes over, your survival instinct kicks in, the amygdala in the brain decides you're about to be run over by a 10-ton truck, and you forget about your deep breathing. So with constant practice, they learn to think, I need to deep breathe. And do you know what? It can transform a child. Well, anyone. You know, I would say to anyone, if you suffer from stress, learn how to deep breathe. It's not difficult. Anyone can do it. You can do it without anybody knowing what you're doing, and it makes a massive, massive difference. So that's always the first thing that I advise people to do.
Fantastic. Yes, it's so important, isn't it? The breathing. It's so unconscious, obviously.
Yes.
But to bring it into the fore, to the conscious mind, and focus on it.
Do you deep breathe when you? Because I know you're quite meditative. Do you find that beneficial?
I do, absolutely. It's automatically, like, because I've done it now as well, and I've practiced it quite a lot. It's an automatic switch. If I ever do feel stressed or threatened, or you know, the first thing I do now is breathe. Whereas our sort of automatic reaction is to freeze, you know, the fight or flight mechanism.
Yeah. So when you deep breathe, do you do it for, what's your ratio? Do you breathe in for a certain amount of time and hold it and then breathe out? Because I think it'd be really interesting for your listeners to know kind of what the ratio is that works well for you. But I'm quite happy to say what I suggest as well, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I usually breathe in for 8, hold for 8, out for 8, hold for 8, in for 8, hold for 8. And I do it sort of a circle like that. That's just my go-to little exercise if I'm feeling stressed.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good one to do. I tend to do breathe in, if I can, sort of breathe in for 12, hold for between 12 and 20, and then I exhale again for about 20 if I can. But then I've had an awful lot of practice, and I think the more you practice it, the better you get at doing it. But it's individual. It's whatever works for that particular individual. But it's so important. So anybody listening to this that has stress issues, make sure you do your deep breathing. You know, it's slowly inhale through the nose, hold it for as long as you possibly can, and then slowly exhale through the mouth and repeat that several times. It makes a massive, massive difference.
Absolutely. Yes. And inhaling through the nose and exhaling through the mouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Amazing. Cool.
But it's so simple. You know, it's not rocket science. It's just these daft little, it's these simple little strategies that make such a huge amount of difference in a person's life. And when they're suffering from stress and anxiety, particularly if they're having panic attacks, you need something that you know you can rely on, that's easy, you can do it anywhere, and it just makes a massive, massive difference.
Yeah. Amazing. So in some of the texts that I've shared about you on social media and to my email list, you were talking about, I'm just going to quote you now, we are also used to schlepping along and making do, putting off making time for each other.
Yeah.
And this is so true, because we get into this sort of, into the rat race and on the hamster wheel.
Absolutely.
So, and you talk about being lucky, being grateful, and living with no regrets. So I wanted to just peel that back a little bit more and enter into that and look at from your perspective, when somebody comes to you and you recognize obviously that they've been schlepping along and making do and putting off making time for themselves and for their close relationships.
Yeah.
What would be your sort of number one, in addition to breathing, how would you describe your unique approach to helping them overcome these challenges?
To get them off the rat wheel. I think it's just being aware of the present. I mean, there are so many different tools and strategies that you can suggest to somebody, but we get so bogged down with our fear of the future. You know, I don't know about you, but when I visualize my future, it's like this chaotic blurb of messy stuff. It's like spaghetti in a blender sometimes. And I think when we can we can't affect how our future is going to pan out, because we don't know what's going to happen. Our past has happened, so we kind of want to release the emotion from that. So I think it's just to really focus on the present again, which is a really difficult thing to do, because we're constantly living. You know, when we're washing up, what are you doing? You're thinking about what you've got to do next. You're thinking about, crikey, I've got all that work to do. I promised myself this. I promised him that. I said that to that person. I've got to do that. I need to go shopping. you know, we live in such a busy life these days, and we're bombarded with the digital world. The digital age is great in some aspects, but it's just a life sucker in so many other different aspects, because you always feel, you know, you're accountable to people. Most of my audience is over in the States. So like 6 or 7 hours after this, they're waking up. They're well on for a conversation, but I want to go to bed and go to sleep. And, you know, you're in Russia. How many time zones are in Russia? It's about 6 or 8 time zones. I mean, it's just bonkers.
8 or 9 at least.
It's just mad, isn't it? So, you know, I think we just need to be more present and try and take the emotional intensity out of everything we're thinking about and everything we're doing, because it's the emotions that cause the problem. You know, we look at something and you either feel daunted or you feel fear. If you're lucky, you feel excited. If you're really lucky, you might feel a little bit, you know, energetic about something. But, you know, that kind of leeches away at us our minds allow life to leech away at us before we've even got there. And then you arrive at, you know, I don't know, what is it, 5 minutes you were probably worrying about in advance. And I just think if you can be present doing what you're doing, and if you know you've got a really busy day ahead, what I tend to do is just accept that I've got these things I need to cross off the list. I do try to write a to-do list, and I make sure that I write the one thing at the top of the list is the worst thing that I want to do that day. So I get it done and it's out of the way, so I don't expend extra energy on it. I think is it Tim Ferriss, or somebody wrote a book called Eat That Frog. It might not be him, but it's a brilliant, brilliant book. And it's all about getting the first emotionally charged challenge done in the day, so that you don't spend the rest of the day concerned with doing it. So once the worst thing's done, you kind of think, yeah, you just think, this is brilliant, I've done it. Your self-esteem goes through the roof and you've got more energy and more confidence and more enthusiasm to get the more minor things off the list. And I think when you take the emotion away from it, you go from tick to tick to tick to tick and you get them done. You know, you don't ask yourself whether you want to do them or not, because they've got to be done anyway. So just get on and do them. But while you're doing them, be present with what you're doing and, you know, don't allow your brain to kind of run forward and think, oh, yeah, but I don't want to do that chore later on in the day.
Yeah.
You know, just don't ask yourself, just do it. And it's amazing how much more productive you can become when you take emotion away and when you get your first crappy job done. The rest of them go much more easily. And I think if you can do that on a more or less daily schedule, it's a hell of a lot easier to just be more present and to take the fear and anxiety away from all the silly little things that we schlep along our lives with.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's when you're in the present, you also, or at least I've taken to switching off my phone, switching off any other things I have in my browser, like literally taking away any other distractions so that I can be present and focused and productive.
Yes, I think that's also really important because we're bombarded, you know, whether it's the landline, whether it's the mobile. But unfortunately, our phones are so clever now, our mobile phones. You get pings with Facebook, you get pings with Instant Messenger, you get pings with Instagram, this, that and the other. I've actually stopped my email pinging to me because it was just crazy. You know, I was constantly thinking, oh, I better just phone. And you get addicted to it if you're not careful.
I know. I've turned all my notifications off too.
I think that's really wise because at some point, we need to kind of separate ourselves from being needed by everybody else and just living our lives. And we owe it to ourselves, we owe it to our families, and we owe it to our loved ones. I remember somebody, I think it was Pat Flynn from the Smart Passive Income podcast, and he said that at one point he was checking his email account virtually, I don't know, like 5 to 10 minutes every 5 to 10 minutes during the day. And it was just invading his life to such a degree. So eventually I think he looks in the morning, he may look at lunch and he looks in the evening, and then that's it done. And that's all he allows himself to do, because otherwise, he's a father of two young children. He's got a wife, you know, he wants to maintain that relationship with his wife and his children. And it sounds as though now he's got the right balance. But crikey, I mean, it must have been very difficult when you're constantly just looking at your emails and all the other notifications that come in. Somebody once said, and I can't remember who it was, but that email is somebody else's requirement on your time. It's just like, it's so true. And most emails, if you leave them or ignore them, they get sorted out without your help anyway.
Exactly.
So it's having that wherewithal to say, no, I'm not somebody else's go-to all the time. You know, you have got your own life to live, and I think it's really important that you do that.
Yeah, it's like putting boundaries out, saying, okay, right, I'll check my email at 9 o'clock and at 4 o'clock or whatever suits you, rather than every 10 minutes. Yeah.
Totally.
Amazing. Okay. So one of the other things we wanted to talk about is why are the result of the choices we have made so far, and how different choices create a different life? Sorry, we are the result of the choices we've made so far. So let's talk a little bit about choices, because I know I've written a blog about the power of choice. And the power of language as well, the language that we use both consciously and unconsciously. So just tell a little bit more about what you mean by we are the result of the choices we have made so far.
Well, ultimately, where we all are individually in our lives now is as a result of the choices that we have made. So we all, you know, it's like the glass half full, the glass half empty effect. We all have an opportunity to see things in one of several different lights. And you'll find that all successful people, whether they're business leaders, people that have overcome terrible hardships, people that have, Viktor Frankl, I always quote Viktor Frankl because I admire him to such a degree. He's just such an amazing man. You know, he lost his whole family during the war in gas chambers and through illness. He found his purpose in life. He had a meaning in life. And when you know what your purpose is, whatever that purpose might be, and hopefully it's for a higher cause, you can then make the right choices, or the good choices, to get you to the end result where when your time comes to die, if you have chance to think about it, you can think, I have absolutely no regrets. The choices that I made are the ones that have led me to this final destination. And we all make mistakes. You know, I look back at some of my mistakes and I just think, God, what a cretin. But, as you get older, you get a little bit wiser, and I think you mellow as you get older. And I just think it's really important that to make the right choices, because we can – whatever hardship we've had, for instance, I one of my clients or patients a little while ago was a lady who had been very aggressively raped, and she had given birth to a little boy. And I was chatting to her about it after I'd seen her, after she'd come for therapy. And I said, well, you know, how do you feel? How has it impacted your life? And she said, well, I feel so lucky. And you think, this is a woman that's had her whole sexual identity literally violated, and she felt lucky. And I asked her, where did that feeling of lucky come from? I wasn't thinking, you must be mad, you're feeling lucky.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it was an open question of where, because I wanted to know what her answer was. And she said, well, my son has had 3 beautiful grandchildren. Or children, which are her grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And she said, I know that I am the lucky one because I know the power of unconditional love. And I have nurtured my son. And as a result, I can nurture my grandchildren. But that man that raped me has absolutely no idea of their existence. And I just thought, my goodness, that's so powerful. And I mean, she had every reason to collapse and let her life disintegrate, but she didn't. She chose to turn it around and she looked for the good. And I think it's so important that while we're living our lives, we've got to open our eyes to the wonder of the life out there. You know, we can look at things and we can see the negatives, or we can look at things and we can choose to see the positives. And sometimes you might look at an image or a situation, you just think, where's the positive in that? But the positivity may be in your strengths in dealing with it, or working out how it can work for you in the future. I think we've all become so closed, and we tend not to look beyond ourselves. I know when I was doing my flying exams, our eyes focus, I think it's 3 meters just ahead of us, and the rest of it is a blur. So they teach you, you've got to really enhance your powers of peripheral vision, and you're constantly scanning the horizon, because if there's another aircraft out there, you certainly don't want to crash into it. And I think we need to kind of expand our peripheral vision in everyday life as well, because there is so much wonder out there. When Dad was dying, it really made me think closely about how I would feel if I knew my days were numbered. Same with your mum. You know they're not going to survive the illness that they've got. And so you start to live life slightly differently. You start to really look at the I love nature. So I look at the trees, I look at the birds, I look at the ploughed fields, I look at the crops, I look at the colour, I love plants and flowers. And you see the vibrancy and the just the beauty of pure nature. And there is so much beauty and wonder out there, but we get so used to looking inward and feeling sorry for ourselves or resentful, or we're envious of this, or we think somebody gossiped about us, so we're going to be cross about it. Well, what's the point? Why waste your energy? This life is such a gift, so make the best of it. Don't waste it on silly pettiness that makes no difference at the end of the day, because when you're lying there, you're not going to worry about whether you got one up on your neighbor or not. Your life's bigger than that.
So true,
I promise you.
So true. So it reminds me of a sorry carry on
No, I was going to say it's literally just about seeing the wonder, opening our eyes to the wonder of life, and in what you think might be the direst of situations, it's looking for that positive, because there will be that positive there, and you have that choice. You know, you can decide whether you're going to follow that positive choice or whether you're going to crumble and let negativity take a hold of you. And I know it's very, you know, I'm saying it as a very black and white thing here, and when you're in a circumstance which is very, very difficult, it's bloody hard sometimes to kind of, you know, put yourself out of the depths. And it's human, I think, to spend a little time in those deep recesses of the mind, but ultimately you come out of it, and I think that's key. It's knowing that you can come out of it eventually and live a life of contribution.
Absolutely amazing. What you've just described reminds me of a story that my spiritual teacher taught me, and it was about somebody he'd worked with a long time ago, who had become blind for whatever reason, I can't remember now. And of course, this guy was down and out. The world had come to an end. You know, he couldn't see anymore. He was blind. And my teacher said to him at one point that he had to choose to be blind.
Gosh.
He was physically blind. He was physically blind, but he had to choose it because he was resisting it. And when he chose to be blind, in his mind, it was almost like life opened up again for him. Yes, of course he couldn't see, but the experience of being blind wasn't a crippling experience and one that would lead to nowhere. He then started to see that if he chose to be blind rather than resisting it, that he, you know, a whole bunch of other possibilities opened up for him in his life. So I just always thought that was amazing.
It's wonderful to hear, because I can't imagine losing my sight. It's probably my most important sense, I think, is my sight. And I often talk about this with my children, you know, would you rather be blind or deaf? And we always reckon we'd rather be deaf than blind. But, you know, if you are faced with that eventuality, to be able to then allow your other senses to take over, because the body's so clever. The brain it's amazing, the plasticity, how it then can compensate for senses that you don't have. But like you say, he was in a position where he was blind, and he either accepted that fact or he regaled against it. And once he'd accepted that fact, he could then move on with his life and learn to deal with ways that would cope with his blindness. And however that worked for him, there are some things we do have to learn just to accept in life, unfortunately. You know, life is difficult, and for some people it's really, really difficult. But there are situations sometimes which you just can't fight against. You've got to kind of, it's accepting it and trying to then find the positive in that very, very difficult circumstance. You can't bring somebody back to life. You know, you'd love to bring Raywin back to life. I'd love to bring my dad back to life, but I can't. So you learn to live with their shadow. I know people deal with grief differently, but my dad is always on my shoulder. I know he's there all the time, and I don't want to get over his grief completely, because I want to be slightly sad because he's died, because I love him. But I don't want it to be so sad that it makes the rest of my life a negative, disabling experience. You know, I have to go on. I know he would want me to continue and be a good mum and hopefully a good woman. But, you know, you can't change things that have happened, but you certainly can change your perception of things that have happened.
Exactly. And speaking about that, I just wanted to say, by the way, for people who jumped on a little late, this is Amy Hackett-Jones, and I'm talking to Kate Hartley of Flourish Therapy, and you can find her at www.flourishtherapy.co.uk. And I'll be talking in just a moment about some giveaways and how else to find Kate. But what I wanted to bring into that, what you've just been talking about, Kate, is 2016. I think
that was a big one for you, Amy.
It was a big one for me. I mean, for people who don't know, my mum passed away, my dog passed away, my grandma passed away, etc. I mean, there's so much stuff going on. And then, so that's on a personal level. Then on a professional level, other things happen. And then on a sort of global and, of course, political level, we look at what happened in 2016, and we all sort of sigh and roll our eyes and think, good God, what are we, you know, what's coming up with Brexit and Trump and all the rest of it?
I know.
But if I was just writing, I wrote a letter to my newsletter list earlier on today, and I just sort of thought, how can we change the perception, as you've just been talking about, of 2016 being an annus horribilis, as the Queen would have said, to an annus mirabilis, which is like a miraculous year. And it's really in the perception of everything that's happened. So if I just take my mum, my grandmother, my dog passing away this year, 2016, I have to take with me they're always, like you say, your father's on your shoulder. My mum and my grandfather and my dog are always on my shoulders too. Like, they're there with me, and I see finds, you know, I ask to mum send me white feathers, and I find white feathers around and about here. So I know she's there. But it's like, how can we take the perception of something that is apparently tragic and breathe into it, breathe life into it, so that it's not, the perception is what we turn around, so that 2016, we don't remember it as the year that was terrible, but we change the perception of our experience and learn from the experiences instead, so that we don't repeat them, we don't take them forwards, we actually then in 2017 make it a brilliant year because of what we learned in 2016.
Yeah, well, I think with something like the year that you've had, I can't imagine to go through that. Crikey. But I think depends on your beliefs. For me, a lot of what drives me forward is I've got very strong spiritual beliefs that the body dies, but the soul continues.
Mm.
And
yeah.
And I think there's a lot of energy that's still out there. I went to see a medium not long ago, and my dad came through, and there was absolutely no doubt it was my dad. And this woman could not have pretended. She couldn't have done a generic man that just happened to be kind of like my dad, because it wasn't. It was definitely him. And I've seen a ghost. I believe in ghosts. I believe in that sort of thing. So I've no reason not to believe in it. And so, you know, you've got that tie. You know, Raywin, she'll be here. She knows me. She obviously knows you extremely well. She'll be part of our thing now. You know, she'll
yes.
be nudging you to ask you questions, and she'll probably be kicking me to say, reply. And, you know, I just feel really strongly that I think it depends on your beliefs, but certainly from your point of view, I'd say that you have the inspiration of your grandmother. That was Raywin's mum, wasn't it? Wasn't she?
Yeah.
So you lost two generations of very, very exciting and adventurous and exuberant women in within, what was it, a month or 2 months of each other?
Yeah,
a month of each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they're there with you, and you can carry that forward with you. You're part of the reason of your existence is to continue their memory and to continue their legacy. You know, you have got so many qualities that Raywin had. Well, that's your duty to keep those qualities going. And, you know, I just think you've had a very, very difficult year. But also I think, you know, you're an individual. And I think one of the worst things is when you lose your parents, if you've had loving parents. And I've been very lucky in that case. Although I've lost my father, I've got also a very loving stepfather, and he was actually executor to my real dad's will. So, I've been surrounded by amazing people, and my family's very supportive. And I know if push came to shove, I can always rely on them to be in, to help to console me or to help me or support me. But from your point of view, you've lost two key women in your life, and as hard as it is, you'll have grown from that situation.
Absolutely.
Because you haven't got them to rely on anymore. You know, as much as we like to rely on those people, they're not there. And so you really do have to dig deep, and when you make a decision that you might have phoned up your mum to sort of, you know, ask her about as a sounding board, she's not there anymore for you. And I know you've got your brothers and Sasha, your sister-in-law, but it's sometimes it's not quite the same as having a mum who's known you from, you know, nappy upwards. And I think you really, it's very sobering because you really realise that it's you. And it's your life is you from this moment onwards. Your life has always been you from that moment onwards. But it's nice to know that you've got that security of that parental figure and that parental care and support in the background. But when they're not there anymore, I think you can feel quite isolated, but you can also grow from that circumstance because, you know, I always say to people, you when you're in your comfort zone, you don't grow. And I'm not suggesting that we should all relish the death of our loved ones because that's terrible. But, you know, in other instances, you know, when you're in difficult circumstances, that's when you really find out what your true grit is about. And that's when you pull deep and you can come out with things that you never even knew you were aware of. You didn't know you had those capabilities in you until you're kind of pushed to that the edge of the precipice, and you've got to either jump or fight your way back. And it's those moments when, as an individual, you really take stock and you think, crikey, I managed, I survived. And, you know, to then move on with your life, it can be such an eye-opener. A lot of people that you meet who've had a cancer diagnosis or something like that, or a near-death experience, you know, they've come back from the brink and it's entirely changed their lives. But it took a life-threatening illness or a life-threatening situation for them to actually start to live life. And that's the daftest thing. You know, we're all going to die one day. So why not make the most of it? You know, I say to everybody, live today as though it's your last day, because you don't know when you go to bed. If you're lucky enough to get to bed tonight, you don't know what's going to happen. You might not wake up in the morning. Yeah. And, you know, how many people look back on their lives thinking, God, I just wish I'd tried a little bit harder. I wish I'd made a bit more of an effort.
Yeah, and there's wish I'd tried harder and made more of an effort. But it's also saying the things you really want to say to the people in your life.
Oh, totally.
And I'm lucky in that, you know, Mum had, she had cancer for about 9 years, and I came home. I was living in Panama and came home and took care of her for 2 years. So yeah. I had 2 years to have those conversations with my mom, you know?
Yeah.
To say, because I'd been living away for goodness knows how many years in foreign countries.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a matter of thinking about it. You know, when I heard that she had collapsed that day in 2014, there was just no way, you know, I jumped on a plane and that was it.
Yeah.
But I was able to have those conversations with her, and I feel so lucky now that I was able to do that and connect with her in that way. I feel completely at peace with her and her journey. And I just think that it's so important to, for all of us to have the conversations with the closest people in our lives, because, you know, as you said earlier, you know, you might not wake up in the morning tomorrow. Well,
I know. And it's a scary fact.
Have you had the conversations with your nearest and dearest to tell them how much you love them?
I think that's so important. Haven't. No, and you know, that's why grief from sudden death is so much more difficult to overcome than grief from when somebody's had cancer or, you know, a long lasting illness. Because again, my dad died of cancer. He'd had it for 10 years, and so we had chance to chat and say the things that we wanted to say, but there are still things I wish I'd said to him, but I didn't want to because I knew I'd burst into tears, and I was talking to him and I knew if I bursted into tears, Dad would burst into tears, and I didn't want to make him sad. But, you know, it's just like that's a lesson I've learned. You know, I said what I could without bursting into tears, but there must be so many people out there now who are facing that same predicament, and all I say to you is say those words. The tears aren't, they're not sad tears. They're tears that make memories. They're the tears that heal the cracks, and you've only got this opportunity. And, you know, anybody that I talk to who's dealing with a family member that is going to die, my biggest word of advice is to talk. And even if it makes you cry, just talk, because once they've gone, you haven't got that opportunity anymore. And as sad as it is, and death is sad, you know, it's an ending of somebody that you deeply, deeply love. If you've had the opportunity to say what you wanted to say, and sometimes you need to present that person with the opportunity to talk back to you, because they'll be thinking the same. You know, they don't want to cry in front of you because they're protecting you, particularly if they're a parent.
Yes,
you know, or as a child, you know, they don't want to see mum and dad sad. And we're all very good at trying to protect each other, but there are times when being really rawly honest makes a massive, massive difference. And that's what I learned from losing my dad, is that I would not do that again. I would face the tears, and I would say what I wanted to say, whether it felt like I was pulling my throat out or not. You know, I would still do it, because I think it's so, I don't have any regrets, but I wish I'd been able to be a bit stronger and say some of the really loving things I really wanted to say to him. But I knew I would cry if I did.
Oh, yeah, it's so important. It really is.
But you were very lucky that you had that opportunity to come back and be with Raywin, because sometimes families don't get that opportunity. In fact, I was chatting to one of my very good friends today, and his father's just had a massive stroke, and hopefully he'll pull through. But if he doesn't, he's not had chance to say his goodbyes. And, you know, I just think I feel desperately sorry for him, because some of us, you know, all of a sudden they're gone, and that's really hard to deal with. And there are ways of dealing with it, but I think that's why you never know when somebody's going to die, and it's important to, like, you know, continue to live your life every day as though it's your last day, because you want your loved ones to know that you love them. And it might just be as much as giving them a kiss and saying I love you, even if you're really cross because they didn't do the washing up well, or, you know, they've not put the bins out, or whatever it was. Just overcome
just
that
silly
pettiness.
Anyway.
Yeah, just say I love you, give them a kiss, because that could be the last time that you see them alive.
Yeah, amazing.
And death
amazing,
is very sobering. Well, death makes us live. You know, a lot of people are extremely afraid of dying, but at the end of the day, it happens to us all. And it's the bizarrest thing. It's kind of the irony of the human being, really, because we're born, but we all die, and we're all so afraid of it. And I think we need to talk about what happens when we die, or, you know, I think we need to talk about death more closely as families, because ultimately it happens to us all.
If you know
each other's wishes, and you know each other's fears, and there's nothing wrong about knowing somebody's fears. Because you say I'm afraid of dying doesn't mean suddenly it's going to happen to you, but it gives you an opportunity to talk about it, and possibly eventually, you know, not be afraid of dying, to embrace the death process, because ultimately it will arrive.
And one thing I want to share there on this topic, or a couple of things before we finish, is that Mum, at one point, a day or two before she did die, she said to me, nothing matters anymore.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't in a defeatist kind of, in a defeatist way. It was literally, I'm at peace.
I was going to say, she's made her peace.
She'd made her peace. And all the little things that stressed her, that worried her, that this and that, and, you know, she was all awfully worried about me, and you know, I hadn't found my Prince Charming yet, and all these sort of things. And then, you know, certain things to do with my other brothers, and this, that, and the other. And she just then trusted in that moment, she just finally got that actually nothing matters, and that we'll all be okay, and that she can go peacefully. And I just think when you're able to live in the moment, when you're able to return yourself to the present moment more and more, as you make that a practice through the breathing we mentioned earlier, et cetera.
Yeah.
And you say the things that you really wish to say. Mm-hmm. It means that you can live in the present moment. And another thing that I learned as well from my teacher, who studied Native American wisdom teachings for 30 years, and I've been studying them now for probably 6 or 7 years, is that death is your teacher, like you were saying.
If, I think death's the greatest teacher.
Yeah, and if you hold that, in fact, my whole TED talk was about this as well.
I must listen to that.
Yes. The whole concept of death, when you're able to sort of lean into it rather than run away from it, it really does teach you. And that's how I was able to be with Mum. And yes, of course, at you, there were certain things that I still wish I'd said, but for the most part, I said what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
And because I'd understood the power of death, and there's that, you know, it was, it's imminent at any time for all of us.
Yeah.
So choosing to be at peace, choosing to breathe, choosing to say the things that you wish to say, and really going for it, like your life, your dreams and all that sort of thing. Really, it's just, it's sort of like, well, what are you waiting for? Get out there and do it. And for me, that's what 2017 is all about.
I think it is. You know, we all see the new year as a new beginning, and it's silly really, because, you know, every day should be a new beginning. And I say to everybody, it is never too late. You can be 90 and you can still start to get fit. It's never, ever too late. And I think you've always got to try and keep that in the back of your mind. But going back to your mum the 2 days before she died, and she said, I'm at peace. I have never met anyone, and I hope this is a source of comfort for anybody that might be listening. I've never met anyone in their last few days, actually, between 3 and 5 days, who was afraid of the death process. Yeah. Everybody seems to make their peace and understand that it's happening, and it's all about that acceptance again. It's like the man that you mentioned who was blind. You accept your predicament because you can't change the way things are, but you can change your experience of how you allow it to affect your life. And if you're going to die in the next few days, well, boy, you want to make the best of your last few hours, whether that's, you know, lying comfortably out of pain or just enjoying the sound of your loved ones around your bed, because a lot of people might not be able to communicate in their final hours, but they generally can hear. The hearing is the last of the senses to go. So whether, you know, you might think they've completely shut off, but they haven't. So keep talking to people. But I just think, you know, we again, it comes down to choices, and we all have that choice. Like you say, 2016 has been a mega year on all sorts of different levels. Personally, it's been a massive one for you. But I don't want to go into politics, but, you know, the way the Trump decision went, and also Brexit, they both shocked me. But I'm quite excited. I'm trying to be positive, and I'm excited to see comes as a result of those decisions
next. Exactly.
Now.
Yeah, I think, you know, on the big scheme of things, it's all happened for a reason. So,
exactly. I'm a great one for believing in destiny, and these things, you know, we might not understand at the time why these things are happening, but ultimately, I think, you know, the colour comes out in the wash, and you work out really what the whole thing was for. So, I just pray. World peace, and just keep enjoying living your life on a daily, minute-by-minute basis, because you just don't know when it might terminate. And, you know, you definitely don't want to have got to that state. You don't want to be at the pearly gates thinking, oh, God, I didn't do those things I really wanted to do. Don't leave your bucket list until you've got a terminal diagnosis. Start living it now.
Yeah. Speaking of bucket lists, I ticked one thing off on the first of January, which was meditating on an iced over lake in the middle of Northwest Russia.
I saw you. I just thought, what a mad woman, but good for her. I think you had a very good coat on.
Yeah, it was just brilliant. In case anyone hadn't gathered, I'm in Northwest Russia, or at least I was. And it was, you know, it was just frozen over lake, and it was just incredible. So I sat in the middle of it and meditated.
Good for you.
But anyway, we're almost out of time. So, Kate, people can find you at www.flourishtherapy.co.uk, and just share with us what you've got coming up and how people can get into that.
Well, oh gosh, 2017 is a big year for me, because I've spent 2016 kind of building my social media platform. So 2017, I've already started. I've committed to writing a minimum of 500 words a day, and I'm way over that because I'm creating a course for therapists called Twitter for Therapy alongside Keith Keller, who's an Aussie based. He's bonkers, but he's brilliant. He's like known as the Twitter King. So we're creating that course together, and that will go out reasonably soon. And then I've also got a series of books, self-help books that I'm in the process of writing as well. But you know, if I don't make the effort to put the action into place, it's not going to happen. So I've had to change my priorities slightly and really focus on doing that. So this year is going to be a big year of product creation, and hopefully, you know, that will go out and help people that might not be able to come and see me face to face.
Great. You are based in Suffolk in England.
I am.
But as you say, you're building up your online profile. So the best way to find you is just on your website and signing up to your newsletter. Is that correct?
Yes, and I'm on Facebook as well. If people type in, I'm just going to check. It's flourishtherapy.co.uk on Facebook.
Right.
I'm also on Pinterest, and I'm on Twitter as Kate Hartley UK.
Wonderful. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for being here.
It's been a huge pleasure
to have you on the show. I've had a great time. I just can't wait to catch up with you back in Suffolk when I get there.
Definitely. Let me know when you're back and we'll get together. But honestly, do you know what? It's set my 2017 up as I want it to continue. And I'm absolutely overjoyed to have been on your show. And I really appreciate you asking me to be here.
Oh, pleasure. And I'm so glad we had you at the beginning of the year. Lots of inspiration and deep thinking to get us going.
I hope so.
Wonderful. So thank you all so much for listening. This was episode number 23 of the Being Brilliant radio show with Amy Hackett-Jones of www.amyhackett.jones.com. Kate Hartley was my brilliant guest. As said before, you can find her at www.flourishtherapy.co.uk. So thank you all so much for listening. Go out there and be your brilliant selves, everyone. Have a wonderful, wonderful 2017, and until next time, ciao for now.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.